Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. We'll be returning to New Orleans at the Sanger Theater on March 12th. And we are very honored and privileged to have with us, joining us on the program, Peter Sagal, host of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Peter, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, the last time you were in New Orleans was 2010. Mm-hmm. And the show was
too
big.
Too long.
Way too long. And the show was big back then, and it's gotten even bigger.
It's amazingly enough.
It's huge. Despite all your efforts, it's still gotten huge.
We keep saying, you know, I'm sure once we broadcast this, people will stop listening to us so we can get on with the rest of our lives. But you people are as strange as we are, is the only explanation I have.
Real quickly, because I know the show has gone through, and you're probably tired of going through this, but for the uninitiated, just quickly, talk about how the show evolved from phase one, phase two, phase three to where it is today.
Back in the 90s, the thought was that there were a lot of news programs on during the weekend, you know, All Things Considered and Morning Edition, Weekend Edition, I should say, but not enough entertainment programs that appealed to that same audience, right? So the idea was, let's come up with an entertainment show about the news. Hey, how about a news quiz, right? And the show began. I was a panelist, and it wasn't, oh, what's the word I'm looking for? Good. It wasn't good. It was, in fact, not good. What's the word that's the opposite of not good? I can never remember. Anyway, let's just say that its future was imperiled. And
impaled or imperiled?
It was about to be impaled. That was the problem.
A fine line, yes.
There were some jokes going around public radio circles at that time that the show was called Wait, Wait, Don't Cancel Me. And what happened was, well, two desperation moves happened, one right after another. The first desperation move is that I got this Battlefield promotion from sometime panelist to host. I had started as a panelist on the show, and they brought me in from New York, where I was living, to host it. And the second desperation move, well, I don't know if it counts, it was more of a resignation move. We had a meeting here at the offices of WBEZ in Chicago, where we've been based this whole time. And the meeting, as I remember it, was sort of like, well, you know, we're not doing well. They're probably going to cancel us. Who knows how much time we have? Do we want to do like a serious quiz about the week's news in which we ask, you know, serious people about serious questions about serious events and then maybe give them an encyclopedia if they get it right? Or do we just want to take the time we've got left and just amuse ourselves by trying to crack each other up with lowbrow humor until they cancel us? And I will leave it a mystery for biographers of the future to decide which of those we did. And as we sort of went forward in kind of this new era, just expecting quite literally that the phone call would come any day telling us, I'm sorry, guys, it's over, we discovered that, much to our surprise, that the average public radio listener, at least enough public radio listeners, had the same sick juvenile sense of humor that we did. Because all we did, starting then and really ever since, was we just do things we think are funny. That's it. We really don't have any other, you know, agenda. We think it's funny, so we'll mention it. And enough of you seem to like it. I'm ashamed of you. I feel less alone, but somewhat, you know, ashamed for our country.
I was going to say, what does that really say about the audience?
Nothing good.
We know what it says about you. You've already stated that it's purely a self-indulgent thing.
Well, I mean, I think it may have to do, you know, I think there's a yin-yang thing going on here, that public radio itself and public radio listeners tend to take itself seriously. Like, you know, I'm sure a lot of your listeners tune into the news with a sense of duty, right? Like, well, mm-hmm. I'm an informed citizen of New Orleans and the world, and I need to be well-informed. You know, just you sort of stand there at attention in your kitchen while you, you know, chop your arugula while you listen to Robert Siegel interview some guy about something important. But it turns out that kind of, and I do this too, by the way, when I speak of your average public radio listener, do not mistake me. I am not mocking you. I am mocking us. And I think that at the end of the week, certainly by Saturday, where most stations broadcast is, you need a break. You need to let your hair down, those of us who still have hair, and just be goofy as almost kind of a reward for the serious work as a news listener you do the rest of the week, certainly as letting off, as a way of letting off steam. I mean, there was this old notion of the festival day or the carnival day, which you still see. Well, like I have to tell somebody from New Orleans about the tradition of carnival with the kings of crews and all that. There's a tradition in the old carnival, Lenten carnival, that the fool becomes king. You guys do that literally. You put somebody in a, you know, in a costume up in a float. And there's sort of a sense of the regular order being turned upside down to relieve the pressure, to mark a passage of time, to go back to the regular order with a sense of being refreshed. I don't know. Maybe it's psychological, maybe it's mythical. But in a weird way, we're doing that.
Last time you were here, I interviewed you, and you mentioned that the show really seemed to click because initially you didn't have it wasn't before a live audience.
Yeah, which in retrospect seems, oh, what's the word I'm looking for again? Stupid. That's the word. Oh, I know. Let's do a comedy show, but let's not make the mistake of having anybody in the room who might laugh. That might break our concentration or something. I mean, it's so dumb in retrospect, it's hard to believe, but for 7 years... we regularly did our show in a studio, except for special events, where we'd go on the road and we'd do what we'd call a road show, where we got to be in front of a live audience. And almost from the very first one, which was kind of clumsy and for a relatively small audience, it was like a couple hundred people. Now we play to halls, you know, numbering in the thousands. Even from that very first show, it was so obvious that a comedy show needs a live audience. It's why Jon Stewart has a live audience every night. It's why Colbert did and his successor does. You need, if you're doing comedy, you need someone there to laugh. Otherwise, you sound like you're just amusing yourself. And that's not pleasant. And I say that with the coming of doing a live audience every week, and we're just at the 10th anniversary of that in April. We started in 2005. Every week rather than just special occasions, the show really took off. The show went from being something that was on public radio to being something that sort of is public radio. I mean, our show right now is just, I mean, I'm gratified. Sometimes when people are making fun of public radio, they make fun of us because, you know, we stand in for it, which is sort of flattering.
Carl Castle, of course, retiring scorekeeper emeritus, and Bill Curtis has now stepped into those shoes. And for me, Bill Curtis is the voice of Investigative Reports.
Well, it's interesting.
And so how did you know he was the guy?
Well, this is what's so funny. Now, I knew Bill because Bill's a Chicago guy. In fact, if you grew up in Chicago in the 70s and 80s, and I've seen this on a regular basis, he is as Walter Cronkite once was to the nation. He is the voice of authority. He's the guy who all of Chicago turned to for decades for truth, you know? Mm-hmm. And by the time I met him, of course, he has this very successful business where he not only narrates those documentaries, but he produces them. He's got his own company, Curtis Productions. He has, obviously, a very lucrative and successful career doing voiceovers and ads. You may remember those ads he did for AT&T. We found the internet. That was his. And the Anchorman trailers he did. So let me put it this way. He's a guy who didn't need the work. And so when we first contacted him, and loyal listeners might remember it was actually during a time when Carl was ill in the spring of 2013, we naturally assumed that he would be way too busy to do this, except occasionally on a lark. You know, why would a man of his age and station want to do our silly show? And the answer is because he loves it. And he says we'll have to drag him out before he quits. And for all his success and all his, what do you want to call it, prestige, mm-hmm. what we offer Bill is the chance to stand in front of thousands of people and make silly jokes and get laughs. If you meet him, you know, say backstage, he is not only one of the nicest men, he's also hilariously funny and utterly dry and totally sort of, I think, wicked, I think is the term they would have used at one time for someone like him. And as funny as he has sometimes been on the show and is often in the show, you have yet, ladies and gentlemen, to see the real Bill Curtis in terms of what he can do comedically. And every time, with every show, we get a little closer. You get one more glimpse of what he is. I mean, I think for him, it's just so unusual for him to let himself out, as it were, because he has spent a career presenting the most polished, the most controlled, the most packaged voice to the world. And he's thrived by that. He's thrived doing this amazing intonation of the truth. And it's going to take a little while before he lets himself go. But I think he will one of these days. And then watch out, America.
Well, this will be his first trip to New Orleans in that role.
Yes, I know.
So this could be...
This could be the time, because we always know New Orleans has that effect on a lot of people.
Exactly.
Not just because of the open container law. Although I think that does play a role. Let's admit it.
Peter Sagal, host of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. He'll be here in New Orleans March the 12th at the Sanger Theater. We are really looking forward to having the show here.
I can't wait. And I will say this. When people ask me, where is your best audience? I have said ever since 2010, New Orleans. You guys just absolutely tore the roof off the hall the last time we were there. I cannot wait to get back and see all of you again.